cool things we can do, we can do, we can do. We love the cool things we can do on our computer.
When you need to talk technology, no one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
Well, hey there. Good morning. Adam Lepp, the Computer Guy, right here on your radio, or if you're listening online, your virtual listening device. Good morning. Thank you very much for tuning me in today. Lots to talk about, all kinds of interesting news from the telecommunications and computer world. Of course, it's election day here in the great Buckeye State. I will be voting a little later today and then watching the news quite anxiously to see what the results are. Certainly one of the more interesting and hotly contested elections in my lifetime. We're not going to talk a lot of politics on this show because you're probably tired of hearing about it, tired of hearing the ads. But one thing I do vote for is computer security, data privacy, safe and fun computing, and of course, an occasional wisecracker too makes it just a little bit more fun. Please visit my website, find out more about me, get my contact information, adamthecomputerguy.com. And of course, email me right here at the station, adam@wwgh1071.com. Are you a Capital One credit card holder like I am? Well, this probably will be of interest to you. Capital One has teamed with Amazon to let owners of Amazon's Echo Smart Speaker System pay their bills and get other account information through voice commands. Now, Amazon's Echo speakers use a voice command service called Alexa. Now, Alexa helps users perform various tasks, like turning on smart lights, playing music, or setting a kitchen timer. How about that? The number of so-called skills that Alexa can perform has been growing since the Echo became widely available last year, and now number is more than 100. We're also going to talk about some smart home accessories from Nest a little later in the show. This particular story, though, concerns me more personally, so I'm going to talk about it first, again, since I am a Capital One cardholder, and when I saw this, it definitely was of interest. Anyway, this Capital One service will be the first time that a credit card company has been involved. Capital One will let users check their credit card balance, as well as review recent transactions, pay their credit card bill, and perform other tasks just by talking to the device. Now, how cool is that? Users can sign up for the service via the Amazon Echo Setup app. There, they can set up a checking account link if they want to pay their credit card balance with the Echo. Then, to set up a session with Capital One, you give a command such as, Alexa, ask Capital One for my Quicksilver card balance, or Alexa, ask Capital One to pay my credit card bill. And of course, my question is, can Alexa go ahead and magically, out of thin air, produce the money? Maybe produce a check or money order out of the clear blue sky and pay the bill for you? Of course, the answer to that is no, but it's worth dreaming about just a little bit. Ken Dodlin is the Vice President of Digital Products Management at Capital One, and he wants to talk about the fact that this service is secure. Whenever we discuss smart technology, like the smart home and the smart thermostats from Nest that I'm going to talk about a little later in the show, security, data privacy, and snooping are always at the forefront. Now, Ken Dodlin, again, a VP at Capital One, said security concerns have revolved around Echo since it debuted because it is always on. So it's always in the possible position of collecting and sharing your data. Now, Dodlin said, as a bank, we are very attuned to security concerns. When a user of the service asks Alexa to perform a Capital One task, he or she will be prompted for a four-digit personal key. Now, you set up this key when you enable this particular skill. The key is optional, but the default is to set it on. After a user says the key, the session with Capital One will be unlocked for 5 minutes, and then you'll have to say the key again. So that sounds fairly secure to me. Obviously, it's not perfect security, but it is very convenient. And as a longtime Capital One customer, I believe that they are interested in your security and, of course, your convenience. We will certainly follow this story as it progresses, and if I see any updates, I will be sure to pass them along, because that's the kind of guy that I am. It's me, Adam Lepp, your locally owned and operated IT person, right here on Marion's Talking Place, 107.1 on your FM dial, WWGH. Hey, join the conversation. You should be able to decide what data that your broadband or wireless provider shares with marketers. Period. Well, if you know me, that's how I feel, as I'm big on data privacy. And that's also the way that the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is feeling. I'm glad to hear that. They are sending this message along with a proposed regulation intended to safeguard private consumer information and to require broadband and wireless companies to get consumers' permission before sharing data with third parties like marketers. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler circulated his proposal among the other four FCC commissioners on Thursday, the 10th of May, of March. March, it's not May yet. Anyway, Tom Wheeler expects the entire FCC to vote to open the proposal for public comment at its meeting on the 31st of March. Actual rules would likely be voted on later this year after the comment period ends. If approved, Wheeler's proposal would establish the strongest set of privacy regulations that has ever been in place for Internet service providers. The proposed broadband and wireless rules, which would give you more control of your data, are similar to cable TV and voice over IP services, which the FCC already regulates. So we're adding similar regulation for Internet providers, and I am, as you can probably imagine, 110% behind this. Now, Tom Wheeler's move comes amid heightened concern over personal privacy, due in part to the, of course, ongoing fight between Apple and the FBI over whether the government has the right to compel a company to create a backdoor into our devices. Now, these FCC rules would require broadband and wireless service providers to clearly disclose how personal consumer data is collected, as well as how it's shared with third parties and how it's used by those outside marketing firms. The rules would also require that consumers actively choose to participate in the program rather than be automatically enrolled, and they call for broadband and wireless companies to strengthen security practices for consumer data. In an editorial that he wrote for the Huffington Post, Tom Wheeler said, "Every broadband consumer should have the right to choose how their information bits should be used and shared." Now, these regulations would also set these providers apart from internet and social media sites like, of course, Google and Facebook, which also collect vast amounts of personal data from consumers that is used for marketing. These companies are currently monitored by the Federal Trade Commission, which has limited authority to create specific regulations. Instead, the FTC monitors data collection practices to ensure there's no misuse or fraud. So if you do visit and participate in a social media site or a site that does many things like Google, that's one thing. But if you're a customer of your ISP or your wireless company, that's something else. There are differences, and I definitely agree. Very glad to hear this. Now, earlier this month, the FCC said that it planned to offer a stricter set of privacy regulations after it brokered a deal with Verizon. And that deal, as you might have seen, involves Verizon paying $1.35 million for using technology that allowed marketers to track its consumers' online activity. Now, the FCC has long protected personal information that your telephone or cable company might otherwise acquire about you. These rules prevent phone companies and cable companies from repurposing or reselling what it learns about your phone or TV viewing activity to marketers. So, like if you watch a lot of sports shows, are you more likely to receive an ad that they think will be more attractive to a sports viewer? And so that is a no-no, which I, again, definitely agree with. But the broadband and wireless industries said the FCC has gone too far and called for rules consistent with those of the FTC, that is the Federal Trade Commission. Cable lobby group, NCTA, said, "We are disappointed by Chairman Wheeler's apparent decision to propose prescriptive rules on internet service providers that are at odds with the requirements imposed on other large online entities." Now, AT&T, they argue that internet service providers collect less data than sites like Google or Facebook. AT&T believes that it's unfair to impose stricter regulation on AT&T and other broadband providers, while Google and others, which base their business on advertising, are subjected to less stringent regulation. Well, as I see it, Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, you choose to go to those sites, you sign up for an account, you're not buying bandwidth. And bandwidth is not a perfect analogy, but it's kind of like buying gasoline or electricity. You pay for it, and it's used for multiple purposes. And the ISP really has no business spying on you, seeing what you're doing. Their main thing is to make sure that you pay your bill and provide the service that you are paying for. The spying and gathering of data that might be very beneficial and profitable to them and their third-party marketers, that definitely is hands-off as far as I'm concerned. Bob Quinn, who is the senior vice president of AT&T's Federal Regulatory Affairs, said in a blog post that consumers expect and deserve consistent privacy protections for their online data, regardless of which company is collecting it and the technology used to collect it. So are we comparing apples to apples or apples to oranges? My opinion, it's apples to oranges. And that's why there are differences. I don't want my ISP spying on me. And I'm glad Verizon got that fine. In fact, I think it was too lenient. But it certainly does send a message. This will be a controversial and increasing topic. Again, I do think it relates to the election, as it's very political in tone. Send me an email. Let me know what you think. I do value your opinion. Adam@lep.fm goes right to my studio. This is the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Interesting news and tidbits from the world of technology, mobile devices, and of course, sometimes politics gets in the mix, but kind of hard to avoid that in a presidential election year. Adam Lep here. Visit my website for my contact information and a few other things. AdamTheComputerGuy.com. The fine folks over at Apple have sent out media invitations to a March 21st event at its headquarters in Cupertino, California. And the invitation says, "Let us loop you in." Now, speculation is that the company will unveil a new 4-inch iPhone called the iPhone SE. A 9.7-inch iPad Air also is expected, as well as some new Apple Watch bands and minor hardware and software updates. The event was initially scheduled for March 15th, but then pushed to March 21st, according to press reports. Now, that puts the event one day before the March 22nd court hearing in Apple's legal battle with the FBI, the FBI seeking to force the company to unlock an iPhone used by one of these San Bernardino terrorists. Whether the timing has some implications or if it's a coincidence is not clear at this point. Mike Jude, a program manager at Statecast, Frost and Sullivan, said, "I'm not sure how new products would leverage Apple's fight against the FBI. It might just exacerbate the issue." Always like that word, exacerbate. Anyway, CEO Tim Cook could get a bully pulpit to pitch Apple's position, according to Mike Jude. He said he could point out that innovation thrives where there is no government interference, and maybe broadly hint that no improvements or new devices will be forthcoming in the near future if the FBI wins the battle. So the buzz for this March 21st announcement seems relatively low key, with no major surprises anticipated. Jeff Orr, a senior practice director at ABI Research, said it looks to be more evolutionary annual updates to certain parts of the product portfolio. Perhaps a smaller screen, lower cost iPhone, as well as a refresh on the 9.7-inch iPad family. Jeff Orr said they haven't really touched the iPad line for some time. Now, the new smaller iPhone that's expected likely will have specs similar to the iPhone 6S. Now, the new 9.7-inch iPad is expected to have updated internals and some features imported from the iPad Pro, like the smart connector, and possibly support for the Apple Pencil. So, a announcement with a little bit of mystery as part of the swirl from our friends over at Apple in Cupertino, California. And that's coming up on March 21st, right before a major court hearing on the Apple and FBI battle. So never a dull moment in the information technology world. News and views, that's what you get here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, keeping you informed with a frequent opinion and, of course, wisecrack from yours truly, Adam. Visit my website for my full contact information, adamthecomputerguy.com. Sports and technology. Now, there's a topic which I think is increasing in importance and popularity every day. It is March Madness time. And my Facebook associate, I guess that's kind of what he is, Harry Yeprem Jr., will be here next show, Thursday, to discuss March Madness and some of the things we're going to talk about in this story. So you don't want to miss it, a big event, especially here in the Midwestern part of the country. Anyway, as you may have heard, this was a pretty big story over the weekend. Part of the excitement of March Madness is the anticipation of finding out who's going to play in the basketball tournament and, of course, who's staying home. But somebody apparently did not feel like sitting through CBS Sports' two-hour selection show over the weekend and decided to spoil the fun by leaking the entire 68-team bracket on Twitter about a half hour into the telecast before more than half of the tournament field had been announced. The leaked bracket, which proved to be 100% accurate, instantly went viral. In fact, my Facebook feed was overwhelmed with this. I wasn't even quite sure what was going on until I investigated a little bit further. Now, of course, this depends how you look at it, but this either ruined or was a big relief to people with anticipation as to exactly what this team lineup was. The hashtag leaked bracket and hashtag leaked NCCA bracket were trending. And just like that, you knew which teams that were sweating to get an invitation and which teams had their bubbles burst. This was the first time that CBS made its selection show 2 hours long from the previous 1 hour long format. But of course, in this day and age with the internet pretty much dominating almost everything, even sports, even 10 minutes may be too long. Instead of showing the full bracket and doing analysis afterward, as in previous years, CBS decided to break things down region by region. So for at least one impatient basketball fan, this was a clear shot clock violation. Perhaps next year's show will be a much shorter, straightforward show, so as not to repeat the shenanigans of 2016. So, sports and social networking and leaking of information, a big topic. Harry and I will be discussing this and many other fun things, as he is my special in-studio guest this Thursday. And, of course, you can call us right here at the studio, 740-383-9944. This is the Adam the Computer Guy radio show with all kinds of news and views and interesting anecdotes and always a surprise or two in the world of information technology. Smartphones, phones that are not quite so smart, tablets, desktop computers, laptop computers, and of course, how social networking seems to weave its way into our lives in good and bad ways. Marion's Talking Place. Join the conversation. WWGH 107.1 FM. Adam Lapp. Well, here in 2016, almost nothing can escape the moniker of smart. We have smart cars, smart homes, smartphones, and occasionally also smart people. Let's turn our attention to the smart home. You may have heard of products by the company called Nest. They have some very high-tech thermostats and other gadgetry. They have announced two new features on their line of products, Family Accounts and Home Away Assist. Family Accounts would let up to 10 people access Nest products, like their smart thermostats that you can program with your phone, in a connected home from their Apple or Android device. Now, that means an end to sharing logins and passwords. Users can be added or removed seamlessly from the family account, which can provide notifications to the entire family. Users can also get updates from Nest Protect, as well as check in with the Nest camera and receive a monthly report on product usage. A Nest spokesperson said family accounts allow everyone in the home to connect to the Nest app with their own Nest account. The whole family can now control products, view live video streams from Nest Cam, and receive notifications and get their own copy of the monthly home report. That makes a home quite intelligent. I would say that would make it qualify for Home Mensa membership if there is such a thing. Home Away Assist was designed to track the patterns of household members, utilizing learning algorithms and activity sensors that are built into products like the Nest Learning Thermostat. The feature also works with a smartphone's location service to determine which, if any, users are at home. Pretty fancy stuff there, which is also good in keeping your family safe. The spokesperson said with Home Away Assist, the company is getting even better at knowing when people are home or away, so Nest products can use the location of your phone in addition to built-in sensors and algorithms to do the right thing at the right time. Now, these features utilize sensor data, as well as these algorithms and location data from multiple handsets to help ensure that users will have the temperature just where they want it as they enter and exit certain areas of a house. My goodness, this is making the thermostat in my house, which I just updated a few years ago, look quite antique. Some pretty fancy stuff. Susan Schreiner, an analyst at C4 Trends, said there are plenty of benefits that the system offers, and it goes part and parcel with the smart, connected home. Now, definitely. My home is seeming quite antique compared to these standards, and you'd think that since the occupant is a computer person, he might be a little more high-tech, but This is some pretty fun stuff for sure. Now, Susan said this is about more than just energy efficiency. It becomes a question of how this can fit into your lifestyle to make the home more comfortable. But it comes with some trade-offs. And now we get to the catch. And maybe this is why I have not decided to purchase this product. We take a look at privacy. Is anyone able to take a look at this data? Maybe someone at Nest, or maybe your ISP or your neighbor, who knows who? And that's where the table turns just a little bit. The trade-off is the level of tracking and monitoring that Nest would need to utilize to make its system work. People with privacy concerns may not be ready to have smart home devices track their movements inside and outside the home, according to Susan Schreiner. There's always a fly in the ointment, isn't there? Now, she said for this system to really work, you need to give away a certain level of privacy. So people are going to have to come to grips with their own definition and security. Roger Kay, another analyst in the IT field, said there is going to be a trade-off between in-home functionality and privacy. Since information is reflected through servers, cloud servers that are scattered and shared throughout the world, private data is going in many different places. Some people don't care, but even a small amount of metadata can tell you a lot about what's going on. So that's pretty much where I stand. I kind of like this cool idea, energy-saving idea, of controlling your thermostat when you're not at the house through your phone or tablet or other internet-connected device, but not to mention the price of the items and the fact that they have to work properly. We take a look at where is this data going? And as I see it, I would rather have my low-tech but high-privacy thermostat than take the risks associated with this smart home matrix of products. Of course, it is good for some people. I mean, I'm at home a lot. Of course, I'm at the station a lot too, but I am at home regularly since I do run my business from that location. And so controlling the thermostat isn't really a big deal for me, but if you do leave for work and come back, maybe there's a change in the temperature, maybe someone is coming home early, and you want to control the thermostat and track how it's changing, how it's affecting your electricity or gas bills, then it might be a good idea. It's just kind of a lifestyle issue. And in my case, it may not be super useful, but in other cases, it might be quite a blessing. Now, the people over at Nest said HomeAway Assist needs to know only whether you're home, and the information would be encrypted. But if that personal data were to fall into the wrong hands, however, it could allow someone to monitor patterns and routines of family members. So always a pro and a con when you take a look at these types of things. Send me an email. Let me know what you think. That's what I wanted to say. Do you have a Nest device or something similar, a smart thermostat, or other components of a smart home? Send me an email, adam@lep.fm. Would love to hear what you have to say. Always an interesting topic, technology from many different directions with many different uses. My name is Adam Lep, also known as Adam the Computer Guy, and you are listening to my twice-weekly show here on Marion's Talking Place, WWGH. It's election day, and I vote for more news and views from the world of computers, telecommunications, and hey, even self-driving cars. Of course, occasionally, like any vehicle, the self-driving cars are in accidents, but they've always been on the receiving end until now. Google has filed a California DMV accident report confirming that one of their autonomous vehicles, it was a Lexus RX450H, collided with a bus in Mountain View, California. Now, the crash happened when the robotic SUV had to go into the center lane to make a right turn around some sandbags. Both the vehicle and its test driver incorrectly assumed that a bus approaching from behind would slow or stop to let the car through. The Lexus smacked into the side of the bus at low speed, damaging its front fender, as well as the wheel and sensor in the process. Now, thankfully, it was a minor accident, and we're happy to report that there were no injuries. But this might be the first instance where one of Google's self-driving cars caused an accident. If so, the Mountain View, California crew can no longer say it's an innocent dove on the roads. While this was not a glitch, the software made a decision that led to a crash. No matter what the response, it was always going to be difficult to avoid this kind of incident. Until self-driving cars can anticipate every possible road hazard, there's always a chance that they'll either be confused or make choices with unexpected and sometimes unfortunate consequences. However, the hope at this early stage is not to achieve a flawless track record. Instead, it is to show that self-driving cars or autonomous cars can be safer overall than their human-piloted counterparts. So thankfully, a minor accident, but autonomous cars like the old-fashioned Homo sapiens-driven cars are not perfect. On the general topic of computer and internet security is something called phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, where an entity like your bank or the IRS or your employer is being impersonated by a hacker or other type of bad guy. Not surprisingly, with tax time here, the IRS is one of the organizations frequently being impersonated. The IRS has issued an alert to payroll and HR professionals to beware of an emerging phishing email scheme that purports to be from company executives and requests personal information on employees. Now, the IRS has learned this scheme, already has claimed several victims as payroll and HR officers mistakenly email payroll data, including W-2 forms, which contain Social Security numbers and other personally identifiable information to cybercriminals posing as company executives. IRS Commissioner John Koskinen says this is a new twist on an old scheme using the cover of the tax season and W-2 filings to try tricking people into sharing personal data. Now the criminals are focusing their schemes on company payroll departments. So if your CEO appears to be emailing you for a list of company employees, check it out before you respond. Everyone has a responsibility to remain diligent about confirming the identity of people requesting personal information about employees. Now, IRS criminal investigation already is reviewing several cases in which people have been tricked into sharing Social Security numbers with what turned out to be cyber criminals. Criminals using personal information stolen elsewhere want to monetize data, including by filing fraudulent tax returns for refunds. Now, this phishing variation is known as a spoofing email. It will contain, for example, the actual name of the company chief executive officer. In this variation, the so-called CEO sends an email to a company payroll office employee and requests a list of employees and their Social Security numbers and other personal information. Now, some of the emails go like this. Kindly send me the individual 2015 W-2s in PDF and earnings summary of all W-2 of our company staff for a quick review. Or, can you send me the updated list of employees with full details, name, Social Security number, date of birth, home address, salary? Another variation is, I want you to send me the list of W-2 copy of employees' wage and tax statements for 2015. I need them in PDF file type. You can send it as an attachment. Kindly prepare the lists and email them to me ASAP. One thing to keep in mind is that sometimes the English is not very good, as these bad guys generally are not from the United States. And English may not be their primary language. So look for errors in English and spelling and punctuation. That is a sure giveaway. And of course, again, if it smells like a rat, it probably is. The IRS recently renewed a wider consumer alert for email schemes after seeing about a 400% surge in phishing and malware incidents so far this tax season, a fourfold increase, that's quite a bit, as well as other reports of scams targeting others in a wider tax community. Now, the email are designed to trick taxpayers into thinking that these are official communications from the IRS or others in the tax industry, including tax software companies. The phishing schemes can ask taxpayers about a wide range of topics. Emails can seek information related to refunds, filing status, confirming personal information, ordering transcripts, or even verifying your PIN. The IRS, state tax agencies, and the tax industry are all engaged in a public awareness campaign. It's called Taxes Security Together. Now, this campaign encourages everyone to do more to protect personal, financial, and tax data. So, with tax season here, don't be a victim of this phishing, of this fraud. If you're not totally sure if something is legitimate, ask your friendly neighborhood computer tech, someone like myself, and as I said, if it smells like a rat, it probably is. Some helpful security advice for you, not just during tax season, but anytime, holidays and changes of season, back to school time, of course, also times of the year when phishing may increase, but with the current state of the internet, the fact that it is being used for so many different things by people from all walks of life, you pretty much have to be on your toes 366 days out of the year during a leap year and 365 when it's not a leap year. Please visit my website for my contact information. You're welcome to call or email me if you get an email or correspondence which you think might not be legit. I'll be more than happy to give you my best opinion as to whether or not it is something that is for real. My website is AdamTheComputerGuy.com. So, do you like what you hear on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show? Would you like to be a part of the show? I'm on twice a week, about 10, 12 minutes after 9 a.m. on your Tuesday and Thursday. And I'm looking for regular guest commentators. Your opinions, questions, comments, suggestions are welcome. We can talk about it right in the studio, or we can talk on the phone or via Skype, or in some cases, I can actually bring the studio to your home or office and tape a segment. Does that sound interesting? Send me an email. Love to have you as part of the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Adam at WWGH1071.com. And how about being a sponsor or underwriter of the Adam the Computer Guy radio show? That would just be simply awesome. And I can assure you it is a very good deal. You will get frequent mentions on my show, other shows, and throughout the day. You might even get a spot on our website. Give me a shout via email. That's the best way to reach me. I read my email pretty much around the clock. Adam at WWGH1071.com to discuss sponsorship and underwriting opportunities. Here are some exciting and, of course, fascinating medical technology news that I just saw come across my desk. A 10-minute cancer test, which can be taken at home using just a drop of saliva, is being developed by scientists. Now check this out. David Wong, a professor of oncology at California State University, says it is possible to detect tumor DNA when it is circulating in body fluids, and that approach is known as liquid biopsy. Dr. Wong said the saliva test is 100% accurate, or the dentist, or even in the privacy of somebody's own home. Now, currently, scientists can only use blood tests to detect cancer if they have already taken a biopsy and sequenced a tumor, so they know which genetic signature to look for. Although this can be used to monitor cancer spread, it cannot be used for an initial test, and it can throw up false positives. Now, Professor Wang's tests have shown that just a single drop of saliva contains enough data to give a definitive diagnosis as soon as a tumor develops. The test is non-invasive and cheap and costs about £15 or about $22. It is due to enter full clinical trials in lung cancer patients later this year and is expecting approval within 2 years from the FDA in America. Dr. Wang is hoping it'll be available in Britain by the end of the decade and believes it could be useful for many other cancers, such as oral cancer. He said, if there is circulating signature of a tumor in a person's blood or saliva, this test will find it. He said we need less than one drop of saliva, and we can turn the test around in 10 minutes. It can be done in a doctor's office while you wait. He added that early detection is crucial. Any time you gain in finding out that someone has a life-threatening cancer, the sooner, the better. With this capability, it can be implemented by the patient him or herself in a home check, or in a pharmacy, or at the dentist's office. The test looks for genetic mutations in blood plasma which are consistent with a tumor. Professor Wang said, I would love to do it in the United Kingdom by the end of the decade. I'd hope sooner than that. Down the road, it might be possible to test for multiple cancers at the same time. Dr. Wang added that the advantages of our technology are that it is non-invasive. If you have a credible early screening risk assessment technology that people can use on their own or at a dentist's office or a pharmacist, that's the key. Again, part of early detection. Some pretty exciting news, which I will certainly be keeping an eye on. Dr. Wang, definitely an innovator in the medical technology field. This is the Adam the Computer Guy show, covering technology news and views. AdamTheComputerGuy.com.
Adam Lapp!
Well, gosh, time flies when you are having fun and learning something at the same time. My mom always told me that, and she spoke the truth. The Adam the Computer Guy show is heading into the home stretch. I really appreciate you listening. You know, every Tuesday and Thursday, just after the 9 a.m. features, we get together and talk technology topics, take your phone calls, emails, and Facebook messages. News and views about computer security, making your network and desktop and laptop and tablet and smartphone work better and work smarter. Sometimes news from the world of robotics and medical technology, and of course, always a surprise or two, and frequent wisecracks and other items of interest. Coming up on my next show, it'll be St. Patrick's Day. We'll have a special guest. He was available via a telephone conversation with me a few weeks ago, Mr. Harry Yeprem Jr. He is a sports and social networking guru. He'll be discussing March Madness and its impact here in the great Buckeye State. The leak about the rankings we discussed earlier, that'll be a topic. And of course, we'll discuss social networking and general computer issues. Harry will be live in the studio here at the Marion Center Mall, and we'll be taking your calls. You can talk to either of us, both of us, or just go ahead and tell us your opinion on a topic. Always appreciated. Marion's Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial. Be sure to visit our new and improved website. Produced and hosted and maintained by yours truly, we would appreciate your feedback on the site, visiting it regularly, and of course, you can listen to archives of my show, Charlie Evers, The Wittenberg Door, Sober Joe, The Exchange Club, and much more. WWGH1071.com. Let me know what you think about the site. Again, questions, comments, suggestions, always appreciated. Adam at WWGH1071.com. That's my email right here at the radio station. I do encourage you to get out and vote if you've not done so already. Election Day, always an important day here in the great Buckeye State. Coming up next, Sean Kraft with Swap Shop. Buy, sell, and trade your crafts or other merchandise at no charge whatsoever. Adam Lepp, AdamTheComputerGuy.com, signing off, wishing you a great March 15th. Marion's Talking Place, WWGH.